Okay, we are live in the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse at 67 East 11th Street in Greenwich Village, the cast iron building in the city of New York. We'll start tonight as we always do. To those of you who are here for the first time, welcome. To those of you who have been here before, welcome home. Tonight it is my honor to welcome Mo Reznor and Perry Barber, and we will be showing part of this fantastic DVD, End of an Era, the last New York Giants game at the Polo Grounds, September 29th, 1957. I'm going to basically get out of the way and turn the events, tonight's event, over to Mo, because he's a lot funnier than I am. Before I do, though, I just want to give a quick bio for those of you, many of you here know, but for those listening to the podcast, you may not know that much about Mo or Perry, so you should know about Mo and Perry. And before we get into their bio, I would just like to also thank Josh Prager for attending, the author of the outstanding The Echoing Green. For those of you who have not read it, you should pick it up.
Thank you for being here, Josh.
I wish I'd known about your film when I was researching my book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a film then. It was just footage.
That's for the next book.
That's right.
I'm going to give Mo's bio and just a little background about him because it's fascinating. Mo's, in his teens, he pitched for the legendary Westchester Grays in the Bronx using his 85-mile-an-hour fastball as a changeup. A little guy, he also hit a multitude of singles and doubles for over 50 years, and I believe Mo is the, and this is a compliment, the oldest person in America still playing organized baseball. I believe that's true. And if it's not, it's true tonight.
It's an open age. There's no adult league or anything. I get up once in a while.
We should all be so lucky. Mo broke into coaching in 1957 with the New York Giants' own AA Dallas Eagles, thanks to former Major League catcher and dear friend Nick Testa. On that championship team were guys like Nick, Willie McCovey, Ernie Broglio, and Joe Amalfitano. From 1978 through 1984, Mo was a special assistant coach for the minor league teams of the Montreal Expos. Included on his watch were rookies Jerry Manuel and Terry Francona. He was also flown in on a one-day assignment to Jamestown, New York, to help supervise a young catcher named Jeff Wilpon. In 1980, Mo actually won a batting contest against AA Memphis Chicks players with Felipe Alou pitching. He keeps up many friendships, including guys like Alou, Tim Raines, and former Montreal VP manager Jim Fanning. Mo has spent 25 years as chief statistician for the semi-pro Pelham Mets baseball club. He still works out with the players, never misses taking batting practice, and coaches first base. He continues to work as a comedian, as you'll hear tonight, especially for baseball functions, bar mitzvahs, weddings, whatever you'd like, and writes his weekly syndicated comedy column, Major League Baseball Scene. Mo will be honored, and this is truly an honor in every sense of the word, on June 26th, I believe it is.
Next Tuesday
in San Francisco. It's New York Giants night at AT&T Park, a 55-year anniversary celebration of the Polo Grounds. The Giants-Dodgers rivalry dates all the way back to the day when both teams called New York home, and this special event celebrates that legacy with the 55th anniversary celebration of the last game played at the Polo Grounds. I wish we could all be there. And that's quite an honor. It's Tuesday night, June 26th. If anybody's listening to the podcast and you're in San Francisco, do not miss this. It's going to be quite a special
night. It's me and Eddie
night.
Logan are going to be on. Eddie was the 15-year-old bat boy for the Giants. Mm-hmm. He's now 70. Great shape.
We'll make sure there's a full report on your Baseball Passion Facebook page.
Absolutely. Okay. We'll have the update will be on the Baseball Passion Facebook page, the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse Facebook page.
There you go.
And now I'm going to turn it over to Mo. The floor gets turned over to Mo. He can take care of his comedy routine. And I think it's better if you introduce Perry than I do.
Well, I'm going to introduce him.
Okay.
No, it's not that it's a comedy routine. I just want to first explain why I've invited so few people here to New Year's Eve is, but now, you know, is the time. But you described quite a bit about me. Did I miss anything? Did we miss anything, really?
Your bar mitzvah, maybe?
I missed that, too. I had so many chances, but I never made it. What was I going to say now? Okay, you did that, you did the other thing. I got up four times this year in the exhibition games. The average speed was about 80 miles an hour. So I popped up once, grounded out twice, and took a close strike, which I thought was a ball. 20 years ago. 30 years ago? She was umpiring one of our games, and I'll never forget it. And I was up there, and this pitch came in up here, and she said, strike three. So I looked at her and I said, you gotta be kidding. I was very scared. I didn't want to upset anything because I wanted to ask her for a date. We went out once. And then she...
We did?
Yes, we went to Shea Stadium. And that's when you told me you were going to be engaged. And you made a mistake, but we all make mistakes. Right now, it's too late. That's it. Any questions so far? Because I forgot a few things.
Well, are you going to talk about the DVD?
Oh.
And the DVD will be for sale, too.
When I was a kid, I don't know how old I was. I could check it. I wanted some of my buddies in the Bronx to go to the game with me, and they didn't want to go. So I took kind of nickel from my mother, which I had anyway. And I went to the subway, and I took my 16mm camera. It was a hobby. So I walked in there, had the box seats, I think it was $2.50, and the railing was this high. And I didn't know it was the last game ever for the Giants. And then I saw people walking back and forth, ceremonies, Russ Hodges, Willie Mays, Hank Sauer, Carl Hubbell. And so I had my camera and I said, what do I got to lose? And I got up and nobody stopped me. I was on the field for 3 hours. I could have had a catch with some of the guys. And I met them all, I met everybody. There were ceremonies for the last day. Carl Hubbell, Rube Marquardt, Major Blonsky was on.
Hans Lobert.
Hans Lobert. He played in the teams. Major Blonsky, who I got to know later on, was a good guy. And, it was a great thrill, and I'm taking movies. So I went home, and my mother and father helped me put the narration on and titles. And I put it away for half a century. Until some Giant fans found out about it, and they said, could you show it? I said, is it a DVD? I said, no, it's reel to reels. Change it to DVD. So I did. And they brought the New York Times. The New York Times had my picture in the paper the next day. I said, hey, this is pretty good, you know. Then later on, I took it seriously, and Perry brought me to all the executives at Cooperstown, the whole thing, and they had this private screening. And at the end of it, they all went like this. I didn't know so what. I knew it was good. I didn't think it was that good. So Perry put some music on. Ed Randall did an introduction for me. And then the New York Giants, the San Francisco Giants, found out about it. Gary Minch is not here. And we had another Giant fan. And they said, hey, let's have a reunion. It's all about having a reunion. I took an idea of the Dodgers for people for the left panel. And they're going to show part of my DVD on the big screen. A minute here, 2 minutes there. And I'm going to take a photo. You know, I tell you that, you know, they were introduced like I was introduced. But, you know, I didn't have the guts. Pinch run. Maybe take a swing or something. Pinch run. I still go to first base in 6 seconds. Not too bad, right?
Pretty good.
But then again, what does age mean? Who knows about age? So that's how this took place. And from a lousy DVD that I had laying in my house. And the strange part is that I wanted to be a major league player. Couldn't. Semi-pro, not too big. In fact, I'm better now than I was 30 years ago. Who knows?
I know that. I'm better now than now.
And I hear that a lot in
the bullies I hear. Over 48, I was 60. I was 60. I was the oldest guy. It's a pretty good
I'm the oldest guy in my division now.
Is that right? How old are you now? 72?
Just turned 70.
70.
I'm pitching Sunday. I might pitch a double.
This is baseball.
Yeah, baseball.
Softball, I can never play. A damn ball is too big. It's stupid. 45 feet away. So, thank God he left once. But I was going to, I had a conclusion here.
Thank God.
Huh?
Yeah. That's it. So, why end it so soon? Why end it so soon?
No, I'm just thinking about what I could have said, but when I missed something, I had lived, took one look at this guy and got nauseous.
How old were you when you shoot this?
57,
right?
55 years.
How did you rediscover it? How did you rediscover it?
When two Giant fans called me, found out that I had a
say, how'd they find out?
I don't remember.
You told us about it. We belonged to the same, we at the time belonged to the same New York Giants nostalgia group. And Mo told a lot of people at the meeting about the footage that he had, and we encouraged him to bring it in so that we could look at it.
You hadn't seen it in all those decades.
I reel to reel in the last draw. All these movies that they're trying to bring back and put together again, not put together. I got mine. Nothing happened to it. It's just great. But what I mentioned on the video is that I'm a Giants fan. I was brought up in an atmosphere where there was one Cup fan in the neighborhood. So this junk talked me into it. Took me to a ball game, and I sat in the left field stands, and I became a Cup fan. And I caught a foul ball in 1944 off the bat of Len Marullo. Anybody know Len Marullo? See? Before your time. I know Lincoln was before your time. Lenny was shortstop for the Cubs for 7 years. He batted big, 2-4. And I caught his ball, and 30 years later we met at a banquet. We became very good friends. He was just 94 on May 5th. He called me Mr. Cub instead of Banks.
Who pitched it? Who pitched it? The foul ball he caught.
I don't know.
So you can look it up.
Could look it up. So, there's only one incident that happened with, everybody remember Andy Pafko? That's getting better. I was a Cub fan, and I was sitting in the left field stand, and there was like two men on base, and Pafko hits a shot, I'm screaming, Pafko hits a shot off the scoreboard, foul. And everybody looks at me, jerk, dumb Cub fan, of course it's foul, what are you kidding? And I said, just for that attitude, he's going to hit a home run on the next day. And he did.
Wow.
I tried to skip him a little too. So, those are the memories. Cubs. I don't advertise. I don't advertise. I'm being honored by the San Francisco Giants. What am I going to say? I'm a Cub fan? Because Fontenot was the Cubs. He went to Phillies. Who was on the Giants? Oh, yeah, my second. Ryan Terrio is with the Giants. What am I going to say, Ryan? So that's about it. That's about it. Now, the girl who inspired me, sitting right here, and we've been friends
for
a long, long time. She took an interest, she put the music on this thing, and it just worked out perfectly. So, I mean, now, when I originally did that 21 minutes, when I got serious, I found out that Eddie Logan, the bad boy, was still alive. And he was in Tucson, Arizona, where my son was. I got them both together. I said, shoot 10 minutes. And I'll cut it down. So they interviewed Eddie Logan. You'll see it. Or maybe that's toward the end. Anyway, they interviewed Eddie Logan, and I'm seeing him again, of course, next week. But he's in my film. Then I bought the rights to the last radio program of the New York Giants in the clubhouse. Russ Hodges, Carl Waters. And I made 41, 40 minutes out of it. I went from 21 to 40 minutes. So that's Perry. You'll have to come up and finish this thing off. You're closing act.
Perhaps I should add a little background. While Mo was...
Before you do, I think, though, we should let people know,
absolutely,
listening. This is Perry Barber's about to speak, and for those of you who don't know Perry Barber, this is a true honor. She is much more than a woman who umpires baseball. She's also an identical twin, musician, composer, former opening act for Bruce Springsteen, Jeopardy champion, ex-debutante, trivia aficionado, Christy Mathewson devotee, New York Giants fan, there you go, and author of dozens of magazine articles about sports officiating. Her catchy tune, Baseball, on which she also sings and plays guitar, provides a musical framework for this DVD and has been played at major minor league ballparks all over the country and as far away as Japan. Perry's decades of service to baseball are recognized by the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Her photo is prominently displayed in the Women in Baseball exhibit along with her name on a plaque. She is the first woman to have umpired a game played between two major league teams in the modern era, Mets versus White Sox, March 1985, and is the only woman so far to have umpired major league exhibitions on both American and Japanese soil. She continues to umpire New York Mets and other Grapefruit League spring training games, and we are proud that our friend Perry is part of this production. We are proud that Perry is in the clubhouse tonight. She has a guitar here, so you may be able to get her to play.
During the seventh inning stretch.
And now the floor is yours.
Thank you, Jay. I always enjoy being here at the clubhouse. It's a really great place to browse and check out your unique store of really interesting little items. So thank you for hosting us here. I was about to say that the background to Mo's addition at the end of the DVD of the 20 minutes or so where he has the radio broadcast of, it's not...
Russ Hodges.
Russ Hodges? Yeah. In the clubhouse after the game is over. And what he completely doesn't have is the chaos that was reigning on the field while that footage was being gathered in the clubhouse. Apparently the fans streamed onto the field and ripped up the sod, and we know that they stole the Eddie Grant plaque and the Christy Mathewson plaque, which have never been found since then, although the Jack Loomis plaque honoring a New York football giant was found years later. But it's sort of interesting that your radio broadcast completely omits any mention of, like I said, the chaos that was happening on the field outside. And it's also always been sort of interesting to me that what isn't in the footage that he has, although everything that is there is just completely marvelous and awe-inspiring, that he was able to capture it and then put it away and bring it out decades later. But the Pittsburgh Pirates were playing the New York Giants that day, and he doesn't have any footage of Roberto Clemente, to my sorrow. Although Mo says there, we do catch a glimpse of him at one point.
The end of the game going into the dugout.
His back going into the dugout, but apparently that is it. But there are also some real glimpses of New York life, shall we say, the way people dress and the fans you see at the Polo Grounds, just completely captivating and hilarious. Willie Mays surrounded by dozens of adoring little old ladies, being poked away with a stick by the New York cop who was acting as the security guard at the ballpark. Anyway, my role in it was very minor, and I am very grateful to Mo for allowing me to participate in this event, and to all of you for being here. My contribution really comprises just one song that appears at the end of the DVD. The song is called Baseball, so we probably won't even hear it tonight.
You know, I've thought about this. You have a small group here. It's not a matter of selling anything. If they want it, they'll sell. If you want to watch the whole thing, let's do it.
Well, you know, we'll see.
That wouldn't have any incentive to buy it.
Huh?
No, you're on to
definite. I'll tell you something.
We're in it
there
for
are
the love.
Baseball fans, particularly Giant fans, over 50, particularly over 60, when they see it, Number one, they're in tears, and they see it again right away. So
they want to see it again.
That's true. Yeah,
they're drawn.
Like Sid,
I have
you know, you're with Sid Gordon. Sid Gordon was a prominent New York Giant, and his son was crying when he saw his father.
And Sid Gordon died playing softball in Central Park.
1975.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He died doing what he loved, playing the game with the ball in the bat.
How many places did you live in?
How many places?
Yeah, how many times did that wheel move before it was rediscovered?
You've been where you've been for a while, right?
Now, wait a minute, I don't understand the question.
He wanted to know, when you put the original film away, how many times did you move that you had to take it out and
very few.
Dust it off? Not very
maybe none at all.
It basically lay fallow in the drawer for decades.
With other films that I had, too. I got other films.
Of sports.
Holograms, baseball, all that.
So anyway, thank you, Mo, for inflating my credentials, but like I said, my contribution was just the one song. The rest of the music on the soundtrack was put there by his very capable producer, Steve.
Oh, what's the matter? Steve?
Yes. Hey, come on in. Steve, who is Jackie Mason's sound technician.
Yeah.
And Mo didn't mention that he's also Jackie Mason's best friend and his erstwhile opening act on many occasions.
Yeah, I've opened for him quite a bit.
Yes. So, anyway, without further ado, shall we get to the reason why people are here?
Yeah. Or just one minute.
Yes.
You're a girl.
I used to be.
So, where did this passion for baseball, how did that happen?
Briefly, it came to me very late in my life, and thank you very much, Zach, for joining us late. Zach is one of my umpiring instructors, so thank you very much for joining us. And I fell in love with baseball by reading about it as a subject that you study in school. I wanted to beat a friend of mine at baseball trivia when I was about 26, 27 years old. My friend, who was Bruce Springsteen's booking agent, who I had gotten to know because I had opened for Bruce Springsteen on a number of occasions in my sordid past when I was a traveling troubadour. But that's another story. So anyway, I learned about baseball as if it were a subject that you study in school, not a spectacle that you go to see at the ballpark. So it was a very interesting kind of cerebral way to learn about baseball. And then I started going to see the Mets and the Yankees, and I fell in love with the Mets and started umpiring in 1981 when the major league players went on strike for the whole summer, just to continue some sort of physical attachment to baseball, because at that point I was driving every night with my mother to see either the Dodgers or the Angels out in California because she lived in Palm Springs, and I found a lot of excuses to go visit her for long periods of time since I didn't have an actual job. At that point, I was still traveling on tour with bands and being the opening act for bands. So anyway, so that's how I fell in love with baseball, sort of through the back door, learned about it as a sort of poetry and history, and got to love the actual physical activity involved in it through umpiring, and the umpiring started in a very strange way, too. My mother thought I wanted to umpire because she'd seen me reading a book about umpires when that wasn't true, and she suggested that I start umpiring Little League, and that was 32 years ago. And I went to umpire school immediately. I went to Harry Wendelstedt's umpire school in 1982, 83, 84, 85, and then I went to Zach Rebikoff's umpire school the summer of 1985. For my polishing, right? Zach is a great polisher of umpires. So that's my basic provenance of umpiring. And the fact that I've continued to do it for 32 years, I hope speaks to the fact that umpiring is not the tribulation and being subjected to constant abuse that most people think of umpiring as being. To me, it's always been a lot of fun and a great challenge and a great intellectual stimulation, and really rewarding experience, much more so than not, I'm happy to say. Hi, Josh.
Question and a comment. My question is, what were some of the books that you read at first that infused you with this?
Well, yours wasn't out yet. This was 1978.
Yeah.
And I do remember the first bunch that I picked out when I went to, I decided I wanted to beat my friend at baseball trivia. And rather than go to the biography section of a bookstore, I went to the sports section, and I picked out Ring Lardner, a collection of Ring Lardner short stories, a great sports writer from back in the 20s and 30s, who wrote a series of stories about a fictional pitcher named Alibi Ike, who pitched for the White Sox, and the stories are just hilarious, even now, even though he writes in a very peculiar vernacular. That just seems to fit the subject. And I also read Eight Men Out by Elliot Azanov, and a Roger Angel book called Five Seasons, and a book by Pat Jordan called False Spring that's just a wonderful account of his refusing to come to grips with the demons that possessed him and kept him from achieving success when he was a pitcher in the minor leagues. And sort of coming to terms with that years later in a follow-up book that is very good, too, called A Nice Tuesday, I think. Is
the title. Did you ever read The Celebrant?
Oh, yes, The Celebrant by Eric Rolf,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, Eric Rolf Greenberg, and it's all about
yes.
your... Christy
yes,
Mathewson.
Oh, yes, so a wonderful book about my personal hero, Christy Mathewson. And there are a lot of books about Christy Mathewson. Ray Robinson wrote a wonderful book. Frank DeFord, The Old Ball Game, about John McGraw and Christy Mathewson. So there's no shortage of books about Christy Mathewson, Big Six. And I just love him and the Giants and everything about them. And I'm so grateful that you wrote your book. And
if I could go to one place, if I could be in a time machine and go to one place, not like when the Jews got... You know, the Ten Commandments at Sinai. I go anywhere in the world. I'd be there on October 3rd, 1951, in Thomas. But my comment was, just as a testament to your love of the game, I play softball with a bunch of friends in Central Park, and we can divide our games into sort of good games and great games. And the great games are when Perry comes, just because she's wonderful and umpires our game. The whole
no, I don't game, do it just because I'm wonderful. I do it because I get all the love that... an umpire could ever want from his ball players.
The whole game is different. You know, you have these annoying guys who will take like 75 pitches, you know, and the game goes along beautifully, and Perry is sort of the unquestioned authority on the field, and it's a very special thing.
I like that, being the unquestioned authority.
She won't tell you, but I'll tell you. There are people in the business, umpires, who consider her more knowledgeable than anybody when it comes to umpires. And you made the headlines 2.5 years ago when you called David Wright out on strikes. That got in every paper in the country.
Well,
and
I
then
called,
he was
I
angry
called
and then
later
apologized.
Heard that wasn't strike.
Well, according to him, it was. As a matter of fact, he said what he said to me. I had the plate 2 days in a row during spring training, and the first game. I called him out on strikes, and the very next at-bat, he almost struck out looking again, but he swung at the last pitch and wound up grounding out. And the next day, when he comes out and sees me behind the plate, and I'm thinking, I wonder how he's going to react, and he gave me the most charming smile, and I said, David, you're not mad at me, are you? And he said, oh, no, that was a great pitch. You had to call that pitch a strike. And then the pitcher throws a pitch, and whack, he hit this pitch 500 feet over the left field fence. It was great. I mean,
he
I
was
felt
afraid
like,
to take a pitch.
That was it. I like it when they come up swinging. When they know me, they better swing the bat, including you now, Mo. It only took you 30 years to learn that. So.
It's a little high. I went hard.
So, shall we enjoy the
Absolutely.
The movie?
So,
has everybody got popcorn? And
I don't. Very thirsty.
We got Cracker Jack. Clubhouse.
Have this to our podcast audience. I know you've enjoyed listening to this. If you would like, unfortunately, you will not be able to see the DVD, anyone listening to this podcast. So if you're interested, just please go to Bergino.com or give us a call. You'll see our contact information, and we'll take it from there. And we'll sell a million of Mo's DVDs that way. And for the rest of us, we're going to be honored to watch the DVD and then listen to Perry sing baseball, maybe, afterwards. Thank you very much. Farewell.